Against the Machine, your irreverent source for discourse on all things regarding race, racism, white supremacy, and white folks' tears. My name is Scott Woods. I'm here co-hosting with my man, Aaron No Name. Aaron, what is up?
My blood sugar.
Your blood sugar! How's the view from them bleacher seats, yo? Got to get that blood sugar under control, man, because you might say some shit you don't mean.
That happens. It's been known to happen.
Yes, apparently. So this week, we will, this week, like we do it weekly, this show, we'll be talking about a few things. But since we just mentioned it, how about that racist basketball announcer?
Oh, God, man.
I didn't even peep what he said.
You didn't peep the apology or what he said?
No, I read his apology, but I didn't peep what he said.
Oh, they left a hot mic on, and the girls kneeled during the anthem, and he dropped the N-words and all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Like, I wonder how long that went before somebody told him that he was live.
Yeah.
Was that like 3 seconds? Or was it like was it like the anthem? You know,
I'm just disappointed they didn't find out by something smashing through the window of the box there.
Like, this shouldn't have been a game that day.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody should have just been in a fight.
Or go home at least.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Yeah.
I wonder who won the game.
Do you really though?
I do. I mean, you know, out of morbid curiosity.
But do you really wonder, or do you think you know who won the game?
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh man, he done amped him up.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How do you? Well, we know how that happens.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's a problem. I mean, apparently the Papa John's guy says it's taken him 2 years to get that word out of his vocabulary.
2 years.
That's what he said. Said he's working on it.
Oh my God. What? Like, so like a year and a half after what went down, you're still doing it?
He says he's working on it. It's just, you know,
every once in a while.
Like, how long were you saying nigger? Like, how often?
His entire life, every day.
Like, obviously his whole life. But how often do you have to be saying a word for it to take 2 years for you to stop saying the word?
Apparently your punishment wasn't bad enough.
I can't think of a word. I mean, like, it. If you told me I had to stop saying it, it might take me 2 years before I could really get there. You know what I mean? That, like, it says a lot about the frequency, you know?
Yeah. Oh, so it was in Oklahoma, for the record.
The basketball game?
Yeah, the announcer's name was Matt Rowan. Later apologized, blaming it on his type 1 diabetes, which I did not know was a side effect of type 1 diabetes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Get some orange juice in the booth, goddammit.
Oh man.
Yeah, man. It's insane. Our world is insane.
Yeah.
This is why people just need to get hit. Because we have to disrupt the formula, man. We have to disrupt this formula where somebody does some racist shit and now everybody's like, let's see what happens. Let's see if he learns from it. All anybody should be talking about is these girls, these high school girls, like coming into social consciousness and political consciousness and all these things that had to have that experience. Like, that should be the only thing in the mainstream public conversation. And if somebody just walked up there and beat the shit out of him, that's all we'd be talking about. Because then he wouldn't have had to issue an apology. He'd have been like, oh man. Then, you know, white people could be like, debate whether or not that was an overreaction.
You know, what's funny is like that was running for like a minute or so.
Yeah.
And then when he's like, fucking nigger, then they cut it.
Yeah.
So when he was just making general commentary about them kneeling during the anthem, it was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. He was a voice of the people until he was too much a voice of the people. And then they were like, cut it, cut it.
Cut it, cut it. You took it too far.
Too honest.
That's right.
Wow. Oh, man.
Oh, well. Anyhow, another Tuesday night in America.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah. What else? Let's talk about Stacey Dash real quick since we're in the zone.
The masochistic zone? Is that the zone?
Possibly, yeah. So Stacey Dash was recently interviewed and she decided that she wanted to come out and say, hey, I made some mistakes, you know, the whole Trump thing was, you know, I thought it was one thing, it didn't pan out. And so, you know, yeah. And I'm like, fuck Stacey Dash. And I don't want to hear nothing about no fucking reconciliation. And I don't want to hear shit about we got to leave a door open and calling in and all that. Like, I'm with that for almost a lot, you know, for a lot of situations.
Yeah.
But not this one.
Well, she's telling on herself even when she talks about it. Because first of all, why is Stacey Dash acting like she just became a problem with the Trump situation? I mean, she's been a problem since like right after she was on Fresh Prince. You know what I mean? Like, she's been a problem for 20 fucking years and she's apologizing for the last four. So already I'm like, what? You clearly don't know what you don't even know what you're talking about with your own apology.
Okay. So before we say another word, I got to clarify that Stacey Dash was not on The Fresh Prince.
Wasn't she? She was a guest on there.
Oh, a guest. Okay.
Yeah.
As a guest. Got you.
She played the rich singer and she gave him the engagement ring.
Okay.
And then he gave her back. And then at the credits roll, he went back in and grabbed a ring.
Ah, okay.
I'm pretty sure that was her.
Got you.
Maybe it's another like New York, Oklahoma situation where my memory is.
No, I just had to make sure you weren't besmirching the good name of Karen Parsons.
No.
Okay, no. Got you. No. Long as we're clear.
No, yeah.
Yeah, now back to Dragon. So yeah, man. Like you wrote like a book and you've been like doing, you know, a generation's worth of bullshit talking. And I mean, like, you've participated in very self-effacing humor about your positions, right? So let's not even pretend like any of this is where it's going, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like this last year, and definitely since January, it's like the conservative segment of our society has said, okay, so I think there's a line in the sand. I think I can see a line in the sand. And so some of them are just kind of like, yeah, I don't think I want to go into paint, you know, past January 6th.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, okay, that's a bridge too far. I'm just trying to get paid. I'm not trying to like carry a gun and have people sending me death threats for the next 10 years.
Yeah. You know, and it's important to note that it's only they waited till after January 6th didn't work out to make those statements.
Right. So
they like as it was happening, I didn't see any of them like being like, no, stop. Yeah. If it had worked and we had like Mr. Man for life, I don't think she'd be making these statements.
Yeah. Like she posted one tweet on like January 6th and it was not like go troops or anything like that. Right. She was quiet as fuck on January. Right. You know what I'm saying? Right. And then so after that, it was not like about the shit.
Right. I believe that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not like you had any kind of coming to anything. You just did a cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
That's, you know.
Right.
I reject your cost-benefit analysis. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like that makes me a cold-blooded person or anything, or makes me bad at calling in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, in all fairness, I've not seen very much of people trying to call her in either, right? Like,
no, I think everybody.
Most people are just basically like, sorry.
Yeah.
Stacey Dash.
But we gotta, like, you know, look, as a people, we have to start applying consequences to these things. This may also be a candidate for getting punched in the mouth. I don't know, but like, we definitely need to be applying some consequences here because. Yeah. I don't think you get to go in the paint for Black Death, basically, and yeah. then say, well, you know, I was tripping.
Right.
I was on some other stuff and blah, blah, blah. And
right.
Nah, man.
That's, I got nothing to add to that. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she'll be all right.
Yeah, she'll be okay.
I'm telling you, man, like, she's not trying to get back into anything anyway, so.
Right. You're not going to suddenly see her at the Soul Train Awards.
Right. And she wouldn't be there if they invited her, really, I bet. Well, she's a narcissist. She'd be anywhere she was invited if they told her she'd be on TV. But
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. She's not even trying.
Mm-mm.
Don't even worry about it. Save those conversations for people that are actually trying, at least, you know?
So in other news, since we're talking about an interview, let's get to this other interview, which has maybe a couple of the little pieces of fallout attached to it.
Right. So
did you actually watch the Meghan Markle interview?
No.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you knew the answer to that question before you asked.
I never entirely know when you're going to like go in for the self-flagellation. You know,
that's true. I will dive in from time to time. That's accurate. Mm-hmm.
That's accurate. Fair.
But I only watched it in real time because somebody suggested that they knew me so well that I wouldn't. So then I, out of spite, watched it.
Of course.
And I mean, there was, I mean, I probably should have just called you or something and just tried to talk myself out of it because it was just a very disheartening experience. All around, and not for the reasons why it was disheartening for many people.
Yeah. What were your reasons?
Well, I mean, to like, okay, so right before I turned that on, I had just watched the 60 Minutes piece about Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
And they were doing a story. They were trumpeting it as a story of like the effects of COVID and unemployment. How COVID has basically eradicated, you know, the like low income jobs.
Okay.
And so they were in Columbus where that has happened a lot.
Right.
And then in the first interview they had in the segment's like 11 minutes long, but the first interview is with this white woman who's only like, I don't know, 23 years old, 24, something like that. And she is homeless. Or at least at the time this interview was homeless.
Okay.
Living in a tent, pregnant, and she has a job.
Jesus Christ.
Right. So to me, that's a story of like, and that was true before COVID.
Right.
So now she also does not have her job, which is the story. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. That story is about wealth disparity. Okay, that is not simply a homeless person story or we lost our jobs in COVID. This woman was homeless prior to COVID and she became homeless and unemployed in the process.
Yeah.
Right. So this is a story about something entirely, not entirely different, but about something else as well.
So her homeless tent life got worse because of COVID.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Right. So I'm watching that. And then I turn, I mean, like literally within the next few minutes, I started watching the Meghan Markle thing.
Yeah.
And just the cognitive dissonance of those two stories was just, I just couldn't contain myself, man. I was just like fidgeting and shit. I'm just like, what's happening? What did you do? What did you sign on for? You know, I'm watching these two still rich
as fuck
royals on the run.
Yeah.
Who don't work.
Yeah.
Their idea of homeless is I flew over from England to California to stay in Tyler Perry's mansion, presumably rent-free.
Yeah.
And with the benefit of a security detail for however long they were staying there. And that's their gig. They're just here.
That's rock bottom for them.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm like, the fuck are you? What? Now, I don't expect them to have done anything other than everything that they did.
Cool. Of course.
I of course, was more mortified by our reaction to that to some extent. Like, very little surprises me about people's reaction to things, but I was still, I still had to cycle through the emotions to get to the point where I could form words, right?
Yeah.
Because we are essentially treating them as royalty, right? Yeah. They basically flew over here and just kick-started a monarchy all over again.
Right.
Like, we are treating them the way that they want to be treated in England.
Yeah, that's right? A good point. Yeah, that's a real good point.
Like, and I'm looking around like, what the fuck are y'all doing, man? Like, why are we paying attention? Now, listen, I get it. They're famous for whatever they're famous for. So we have to spend some amount of energy on them. But, like, literally, like 2 days after this, this was still the only story on like morning television.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the fuck are you doing, man? This is a 24-hour story, tops.
Especially because the story remained about the story, right?
Yes.
I mean, rich, famous people are good to look at when they have these experiences because you can isolate the variable.
Hmm.
You can't say it was about anything else except what it was about.
Right.
And that's, I think that's valuable, but that's about the extent of its value. Then you have to draw it out and start looking and start, you take that little variable you isolated and then go start plugging it into the real equations. Don't sit here and fucking keep talking about these people. Like, I'm sure they're nice people. You know, it's whatever. They're doing all right. They're going to make it.
I mean, look, I refuse to entertain a news story about someone with no last name. What the fuck is Prince Harry's last name? We just calling this motherfucker Prince Harry. Motherfucker, this is America. You need unless you are a rock star, you need last names in this motherfucking man.
Yeah. Yeah. You better learn how to sing or something, or tell us your last name and drop that moniker.
I got all of Megan's name. This motherfucker's Prince Harry.
That's true. Really? That's
a good His point. Name, for the record, is Henry Charles Albert David. He got all the white names together.
Wow.
Right? That's the dullest ass white name you ever fucking heard. So technically, we should call him Prince Harry because he's otherwise completely indistinguishable from the motherfucker at AutoZone. Okay? He got all the white guy names. Henry, Charles, Albert, David.
Oh, okay, those are pretty solid white names.
The whitest of the white.
I think Henry is actually his blackest name. I think the one he uses is actually the least white of all four of those.
Well, I mean, it's funny because like that's just a riff off, you know, it's Harry's just a riff off Henry, and so it would. Technically, he's taking up the space of five names here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, technically, Harry should be short for Harold, and that's not one of his given names.
that's true.
So what are we really doing here?
Yeah, it should be Hank, right? Isn't it Hank that he should be using?
I think you're right. Yeah, yeah.
What this is America. You're Prince Hank now, if anything.
Prince Hank! You're in America now, you Prince Hank, motherfucker.
Welcome. Yeah, home, Hank. Man. You know, Hank could be smoking a Newport and working on your car, right? Like, so.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, now if you had told me Tyler Perry had given his mansion on loan to Hank. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
that tracks, you know.
Yeah, Hank and Meg, not Megan.
Right. Oh, man. But then, of course, and it was funny, too, like, watching it, you know, Oprah is doing the Oprah thing where she's asking, you know, some fairly obvious questions,
yeah,
and having some very interesting reactions. And it was funny because, you know, when you watch something like that, you got to like distract yourself while you do it. So mm-hmm. like that's a Twitter moment.
Yeah.
So you go on Twitter, you just kind of watch what everybody's saying. And the interesting thing is like all of the people who are like posting, like, why is Oprah asking that? Why is she acting like she don't know what racism is and this and this and that? And I'm like, y'all, that's for y'all benefit, okay? Oprah talks to these people all the time. Like, she knows these people. So she's not asking that because she don't know. She asking that because some of y'all don't know.
Yeah, Oprah's over in Europe getting kicked out of purse stores. She fucking knows what's going on.
Right. What are you talking about? Man? Ease up. Oprah's just doing a job.
Right.
Okay. She's doing the work that only Piers Morgan wants to do. That motherfucker, yo.
He wants to do that work so bad, too. Huh?
So bad, man. Just dropping the names for the last, 3 years? I don't even know how long they've been married.
But, man,
he got a hard up for her, man.
Yeah, man.
He lost his job over that crush.
For real. Time to take the poster down, man. Just let it go.
Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, like, he was just saying some really off shit the next day.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, I mean, but kind of typical for him on that level.
Right.
But he just sounded like just the sorriest ass.
Incel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, man.
Yeah, nothing like that racist incel energy. That's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have successfully ignored him for at least 10 years. But that clip of him walking off was just...
Yeah, Alex Beresford got in his ass.
Man.
Like, who pissed Alex off that morning? Other than Peter. That almost felt like a projection. Either that or it was like some shit he'd been holding on to for like several years.
Well, probably at least since Pierce made him walk off the show.
that little piece of theater.
Yeah.
I maintain that was almost all theater.
Okay.
You don't think so?
I don't think it was all theater, no. I think Pierce, look, if you're that Alex dude, he seems like a normal person. Okay. Yes. And I haven't watched that show a lot. I've just seen these like couple of clips. My impression is he's the only normal person there. And that's
which is a weird position to be when you're the only black person on the set.
So you're the only black person on the set and the only person that's like just kind of normal that actually thinks in a normal, like actually thinks through things through, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two really difficult positions to be in. He's both for all these number of years. I'm sure Pierce was getting on his nerves for plenty of times.
Every morning, I'm sure.
Every morning, I had to listen to that shit. And then I wouldn't be able to handle it. This dude's going to make fun of my job? You're literally paid for nothing. Like, you're famous for just being, like, a useless windbag. And you're telling me the weather is worthless.
I mean, while I have no love for weathermen, I am on record as having no love for weathermen.
Correct.
I kind of dig the Alex Beresford dude. I'm kind of feeling him, right?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he has the weather wrong too, but
like, if we want to talk about what's pointless, let's just all be out of a job. That's what I would say if I was him. Like, everything we're doing here is fucking pointless. That's the gig. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So right. I might have to collect myself to keep from saying that.
Yeah, you certainly don't need three or four other people at one desk plus a weatherman. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like two tops.
Right.
America at least gets that right sometimes. Two tops.
Right. Right. Agreed. You know?
But, you know, whatever.
But the way he got him was just real straightforward. Like, all he had to do was just lay a couple things out. He didn't really even have to come for him.
Yeah. You know? Which is why I think, like, the way that, like, when Pierce was making fun of Alex and Alex walked off the set and then came back,
mm-hmm.
you know, that was like a bit. But when Alex was talking about Pierce, that was like news. You know,
yeah.
Here are the facts. You have been doing this. You act like this. You talk like this. Oh, and now you're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, okay. I like that.
Right.
I'm never going to watch that shit, but I like that.
Yeah, that was great. That was a real good moment.
Yeah.
You know, when he's doing all that shit, nobody there has a problem with it. Nobody's cutting a commercial, you know. But then when Alex is like, you know, like that she's allowed not to talk to you, right? Then everybody's like, whoa, okay, Alex, that's enough. We need to take a break.
Yo, when he said that shit, like, I don't think she's mentioned you since she got married. You've done nothing but talk about her. I don't think she's mentioned you one time.
Yeah.
That's like, yo, your dick is so small. And Pierce was like, I don't have to put up with it. Okay, I'm out. We're not going to be talking about penises now. We're out. Fuck this. I'm not dealing with that shit.
Oh,
I'm not going to have this black guy talking about my penis. They already had like a motherfucking contest. I don't know if you peeped that, but like at some point in the past, like Pierce had said some off shit or something.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it was about. Something, I don't remember what it was, but at some point this Alex dude posted a picture of him with no shirt on. Like, so he's all worked out, abs, all that right. shit. And just kind of shut Pierce's shit down at the point, you know.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was like, yeah, I think he's the winner here, or whatever. Whatever the issue was, some bullshit.
Oh Lord.
So love Alex has been like lightweight getting in Pierce's shit for a while.
Got it. Well, that's good. That's good. Good for him.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck Piers Morgan.
No doubt.
That's been true for a while, but now he's just kind of showing his ass.
Yeah. I mean, when he adds that extra layer of not being able to take just a fact check, it wasn't even an attack. You know?
Right.
And he's just Mr. Attack. You know, that's like, oh my God. I thought he was already completely unpalatable, but then he found like a new layer, you know,
but but to get back to the original piece of the story, like, I guess the one thing I want to tack on to that is I just need Americans to stop treating these people as if we are still part of the British Empire. Right. Like these are just two unemployed motherfuckers, man. Let's not get caught up in that shit.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, right. Like, I think this is the end of my campaign, but
yeah.
I just want to go on the record for just imploring people to not do that.
Yeah. Hashtag Hank and Meg.
Oh shit.
Did you see that white girl that was beating up the Muslim girl?
Yep.
So tell me then, am I weird for the Pierce Morgan thing reminding me of that? Does that make me weird?
I see the analogy, yeah.
it hit home for me because watching both of those videos, I was like, yo, people need to remember, you know, we talk about racism as a construct, right?
Yeah.
But it's a construct for violence.
Yes.
That's what it was built for.
Mm-hmm.
And you see it really clearly played out there. Like, who gets to be violent? Who gets to be the victim of violence? Mm-hmm. And who doesn't get to be the victim of violence? And who doesn't get to stop the violence?
Mm. You know?
It's like all, it's all right there.
Yeah. You know?
It's crazy.
Yeah. The minute we stand up.
Yeah.
Is, you know.
It's gone too far.
That's right. That's when your co-anchors are like, well, hold on.
Hold on. Stop talking, Alex. We need a commercial. Or the teacher comes angry. In and says, oh, whoa, this is getting too rough. You were just like beating the shit out of a kid that wasn't responding, that you didn't feel like jumping in there.
Right.
That wasn't crossing any lines for you.
Right.
It's only when the blonde hair is on the floor. That's when we got to jump in. Shit.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's all because of his goddamn monarchy.
You think so, huh?
Well, if they didn't have that shit, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
I mean, like, Piers Morgan is like, I don't know. I'm pretty sure he's not been knighted. So, I don't know if that's something he's vying for with all his support of the Queen and such, but.
I'm sure it is.
You know?
I'm sure he would love to hit that mark.
Well, then you wouldn't be able to tell him shit, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, that's, you know, he'd have been like, well, I'm knighted, so fuck you. You know, like even all the shit Alex was saying would have gone down different if he had been knighted.
Yes, that's accurate.
You know, yeah. Assuming that you even do a TV show like that if you're knighted, but whatever.
I don't know.
Show's probably why he's not knighted.
That's funny.
So the next thing we'll talk about, I guess we have two more topics. The first one, I think we can kind of get out the way, that's less dramatic than the last one.
Okay.
Is the George Floyd settlement. There was a settlement for $27 million, largest settlement of its kind in American history. It took about, I think, 8 months to get settled. And on the heels of that settlement, a judge has reinstated third-degree murder.
Right, the third degree.
Onto the cop. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, every time there's a settlement, I almost have the same thoughts, you know? I wish they'd take it directly out of the police budget. It's like a modern system for putting a price on Black life. I also find it interesting how, like, mainstream, sort of like white America, is really, really set on accepting the results of a criminal court as a judgment on your character, but not of a civil court.
Mm.
You know, it'll be like, well, you got convicted. I mean, you did something. But if it's a civil outcome, they don't ever say, well, that's the law, you know, or nobody has to pay $27 million unless you did something wrong. Like, you never hear that from people, you know, which is interesting considering, you know, I don't know the whole history of how civil courts are constructed in this country, but I know the history of criminal courts. So something makes me think there's a reason why they put the one way up there and not the other one.
It largely feels political. You know, it's like, if they were not protesting, and if the world was not protesting, there is no $27 million settlement.
Of course. I mean, right. Of course. I mean, that wasn't the only settlement to go out this month. So there you go.
Yeah. I did think that reinstating that charge was interesting.
I did think, especially because the appellate court was basically like, motherfucker, you better do this.
Yeah.
And also the city is gearing up. I mean, they're really gearing up. They're putting out like don't riot propaganda and they're amping up surveillance. So I'm sure, you know, somebody talked to the man.
Yeah. Like,
if we if we don't get the second degree, we need the ability to drop down to the third. Like, we need something here.
Yeah. And, you know, what Minneapolis City Council did that was interesting was when budget time came at the end of last year, they diverted some funds that normally would have went to the police to other services.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Right. Now, what's also interesting there is that they still allowed for other funds to go back into the police, right? So they have whatever the budget for the police is, they cut it a little, and then they add something else through kind of a back door. Okay. So it's like, so that I, political, right? They want to be able to tell the police, well, we need to do this, but we're also going, don't worry.
Don't worry.
We got you covered. Don't worry.
Yeah. Well, that sounds about right.
I think that's going to, we need to watch and see if that becomes a trend though. Right. Because
absolutely.
That's not what anybody's really asking for.
Of course not. Yeah. Right. And I think, you know, it's going to be, there's going to be any attempt at a sleight of hand that can be attempted. They're going to try.
Yeah.
That's what's so exhausting about trying to make these kind of changes. You know, you can't view it as a finish line situation.
Right.
So, you know, in LA, they said, we're going to put this much into community building. And it's like, okay, great word. But what does that mean?
Mm.
Are you going to divert police funds into gentrification efforts? Like, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to see this on the ground before we start clapping, you know?
Right. Something that the lawyer, Ben Crump, who I can't stand.
Yes, I do know that.
But, you know, he got up and, of course, he made a speech about how the settlement, you know, proves that Black Lives Matter. And I'm like,
did he really say that?
Essentially, yeah. And it's like, who keeps hiring this dude? Like,
yeah, it proves that Black lives can be expensive.
Right. Right.
That's what it proves.
Right. Like, if you think that that proves Black Lives Matter, I need you to look at how much their budget is. It's a lot, don't get me wrong, but
yeah,
it's a lot compared to what?
Well, I also need you to look at everybody else just in that town.
Hmm.
I mean, what kind of restorative justice are the families of people getting that didn't end up on the 6 o'clock news everywhere in the country?
Yeah.
You know, you have to get, if it takes all that, that proves the opposite. If it takes all that for, you know, for like kind of a, to try to approach an honest settlement and something like that, that right there proves the opposite of what he's saying. So,
yeah.
You know, he's a lawyer. Lawyers have to claim victory and all that.
I mean, yeah, and it is. I mean, you know, the family deserves that and more, right?
Of course, yeah, right.
All of this talk about the value of Black lives and Black lives mattering brings us, I think, to our big topic, which is Michael Brown Sr. demanding $20 million from the Black Lives Matter Foundation.
Right.
They came into a bunch of money last year, about $90 million, and which is, I mean, huge.
Yeah.
And Michael Brown's dad is saying, look, you built the, well, let me point out, it's Michael Brown's dad and local Ferguson activist.
Yes.
They are making the case that Black Lives Matter was largely built off of Michael Brown's case, the protests that followed, so on and so forth.
Right.
They've been doing the work on the ground since then. Right. And now that you have certain level resources, we should receive some of that to the tune of $20 million.
Yeah.
Black Lives Matter, I don't think has responded directly to that ask yet, but there has been commentary and questions about, you know, the transparency of their funding up to this point, even before the $90 million showed up last year, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of that sounds like kind of, you know, infighting over resources, which is very typical of organizations that are kind of being built while the car is running, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which Black Lives Matter very much is.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they have stated, you know, as recently, you know, as this year, in response to having received the $90 million, like, you know, look, we have to figure out how to build an infrastructure around receiving that kind of funding, right? It's not like you just dump it in the bank and you just start cutting checks.
Right. Right.
That's so fair. But Ferguson sounds like they're saying, look, you got the money, cut a check. And then you can figure out the rest of that, whatever you got to do nationally.
Yeah.
So do you have any thoughts on that? I know you have thoughts on it because we've already kind of talked about it a little bit, but let's get into it a little bit. Let's unpack it a little bit. And yeah. I don't want to lead you if you might have an opening statement. But I'm tempted to just ask you right out a question.
Just ask me, because it's like, for me, that's the type of situation where there's about, there's like five separate things going on there that are worth talking about. So,
all right, well, then I'll just throw this grenade onto the pile of grenades.
Okay.
Should Black Lives Matter give Michael Brown Sr. and Ferguson activists, because I'm going to keep putting it that way.
Yeah.
Because I don't want people to confuse a check going to the Brown family.
Yeah, that's not what's being requested.
Right.
Right.
They're talking about like building buildings and stuff like that in their community, right?
Yes.
To support further movement stuff.
Right.
Should Black Lives Matter give them $20 million or any money?
I don't think that's a yes, no.
What is it?
I mean, I think, okay, so there's different ways to look, right? So I think it would make sense to have a structure built. I'll start like this. I like the idea of taking those resources and focusing intensely on one community at a time. I like that idea. I think the nature of the issues that they're trying to fight, it would be really easy to spread too thin to where everybody kind of like gets a check for $5. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I like the idea of picking one community at a time, a year, a 2 years, whatever, to like say, boom, here's the plan, knock it out. You know, I don't like the idea of like old school on the block, therefore. You know what I mean?
No.
Like we're Ferguson, we were here on the ground floor, therefore we deserve it more than I don't like the idea of deserving it. That rubs me wrong, you know?
Well, I think on that point, I think their point is that you don't have this movement without this case.
That's accurate. I think that's a fair point. But I think they could say in Minneapolis, you don't have this money without the George Floyd case. Mm. Right?
No, I think that's completely fair.
So if you have an organization like that that's trying to be national and trying to at the same time stay grassroots, every community can make their case and say, this is why we deserve it more. Or this is why we deserve it more. They deserve it more. And I just don't think, I don't really think that's how you measure that. I think you don't want to fall into that trap of measuring it that way and making your determinations that way. Even if they're true, I don't think that's should determine the approach. I think you're going to want something more democratic, everybody at the table, and something closer to, you know, what can we do in this community? What is this community's, you know, impact on the national struggle? And what kind of impact value can we get in that community? I think that should be like more how you're talking about resources. But I do like the idea of picking a community, you know. I just don't think this is the method or the justification. I don't think you want to go down that path, because every year it's going to be somebody else, or you know what I mean? It's just, this shit can pop off anywhere, and it has popped off anywhere. And just because the attention got grabbed in one spot, and I'm not trying to minimize Ferguson. I mean, I think the people there did a lot and are doing a lot, you know, so I'm not trying to say you're not special or whatever. I just think it has to be a broader view than that. And it's hard because you're dealing with community activists. You don't become a community activist in order to have that global view of your community's place in the global situation. That's not usually why you're a community activist, you know? So I think there's always going to be that tension. Even if it's done successfully, the tension will remain. I think there's a way to turn that into healthy tension, because someone still needs to be making noise too about what are we going to do with these resources. That's extremely healthy, you know? Yeah. So that's kind of the way I look at it. I don't know.
I mean, I definitely don't think that Black Lives Matter should be like just cutting Ferguson activists a check like that.
Right.
Like if they have some kind of formal relationship, you know, like Black Lives Matter does with its chapters, that's a different story. Right. Yes. Because one of the criticisms is that comes to Black Lives Matter is that they don't equitably share resources with their existing chapters. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can't speak to the veracity of that, but that argument exists.
Yeah.
And I think that they should always have a way for people who are doing the work that shows up in their mission to attach to the national organization if that seems like a good idea, and to then, if resources exist, to find ways to funnel resources to that kind of work. How much resources, that's on them, that they have to figure that out. What that structure looks like, they self-admittedly have to figure that out.
Right.
I mean, they're going to have a really tough conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going to have to be as transparent as possible.
Uh-huh.
I don't envy them that conversation.
No, I don't either. It's a mess. And honestly, like, strategically, once that big money started rolling in, they should have put something out ahead of it. You know, they should have put something out that said, hey, this is a crazy year in terms of like what's coming in. It's unprecedented for us, and we don't have a plan yet, but here are our spending priorities. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They should have done that immediately. Because they should have been able, especially with the past criticisms, they should have been able to predict that something like this would pop up.
The first thing that happens when you advertise that you have won $100 in the lottery is that somebody's going to come asking.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So, I drove you to get the ticket, right? So technically.
Don't you remember the time I gave you $100? You know.
Right. So they should have, that's just not very savvy of them, I think, to not already have something in place. I mean, they put out that whole big political platform, right? They have that in them. And I think they should have just anticipated this is going to get messy real fast if we don't say, you know, as you're donating to us in really high rates, we want to clarify these are our spending priorities. And this, you know, it's going to take us a minute to get it figured out, the how, but these are our priorities in spending. And then when something like this happens, then you could say, yeah, you're great. You guys are doing good stuff, but I'll refer you back to this mission that we, you know, it's part of our mission, and we're going to stick with that, you know, but we hope that our missions can blah, blah, blah. You know, you can make that whole diplomatic statement then, and you don't have to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And now, you know, and to clarify, they committed, you know, some portion of that money in the form of grants to official and unofficial chapters, right? So, and other local organizations. So, I mean, we're talking like about $21 million of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they did something.
They did something, but that's different from like, you need like a financial mission statement. Like, this is what we're trying to achieve with our money. Not just like, we're going to sit here and decide which chapters and which community work is worthy and we're going to dump it on them. That's going to cause problems. You need a driving mission statement that's about the money and the resources.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never done that work, but to me, that seems like that's what you would need.
No, that would definitely be like, and again, I'm sure they're doing this work on some level.
Yeah.
But that doesn't answer the Ferguson question for Ferguson.
Right? Exactly. It doesn't.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad if they decided to go to Ferguson and just buy up Black Ferguson. That would not make me mad at all. Just buy all of it and just have a whole generation of Ferguson grow up without rent. That would not irritate me in the slightest. I'd be all about that, you know. I think that's the kind of thing you need to do. You need to set up something where you pick a community, you financially free that community, and you make a like kind of a good faith contract with that community about perpetuity. Like, so whatever y'all grow up to be, you need to like automatically, some of your check needs to come into us so that we can do this again in another community. You know, like something, you know, I'm not sitting here planning out the whole, all this shit, but to me, like something along those lines, I feel like that's the direction I would want that money to go to.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a rough one, man.
Yeah, more money, more problems, for real.
For real.
For real.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. They opening the door. Shut the door. Yeah, you wave one off and then the older one has to come check. Like, no, he didn't wave us off, did he?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think it raises other questions too. Like, it raises a lot of questions. I don't know.
Yeah.
You're scared to say anything, right? Because, you know, it's Michael Brown's dad. It's like, and it's Black Lives Matter. Like, these are people doing real work on the ground. These are people that have experienced real loss. In Ferguson, these are people operating under real threat. Like, the powers that be in Ferguson still have a vendetta against these people and are still trying to get them.
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to find a way to figure out, like, what is objectively the best solution without undercutting everyone's moral authority. Because everyone has moral authority in this situation to an extent. You know? So you don't want to diminish that or cheapen that. But, you know, there is a set amount of money. You know, so
yeah, and at this point, like, they're asking for 20 million. That's a third of the money they have left.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that seems like strategy to me a little bit.
Perhaps
let's ask my, you know, that seems like a little bit like a negotiation tactic,
which I mean, ugh.
Not that they would turn away if they said, okay, 20, sure. But I just doubt anybody expects to get the full amount, even if they get something. I doubt anybody would be like.
Yeah, what rubs me the wrong way about that is, like, that's how you work with, like, a white organization. You know, it's like, that's how you deal with like white folks who want to do like shit, you know, but that's like
how you deal with like Chase Banks Grant Foundation or something.
Yeah, you know, but yeah. Like when you deal with your community and your people, it's like it should be different, but this is so much money, you almost can't treat it different. There's something about how much money that is that makes us not able to just do it in the way of community, you know?
I think that's a good point. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it like that, but that's a good point.
Yeah. Something dangerous about that much money that way, you know?
Yeah. And I think you're right too. There's something dangerous about that precedent of taking that particular approach. But again, if you're right and there's been infighting and stuff, we don't know what other approaches have been tried privately. There might have been a year's worth of private conversations that have been happening that fell apart. Mm-hmm. That's possible too.
Yeah. It's on one hand, you feel like you are glad to see the movement or an aspect of the movement receive those kind of that level of resource.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That is movement defining resources, right?
Yeah.
If you use it right.
Yeah.
You know, but if you go out and build rec centers and shit, then you know.
Yeah.
Then you'll be at rec centers with me, dog. I'm still going to do rec centers, man.
He's still against the rec centers.
Yes. I mean, unless Ferguson ain't got no rec center, right? Like, if they ain't got no rec center, you know, look, how much does it cost to build a rec center? Go and peel off a rec center, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is some, like, build a bank type shit.
It is. This is some, like, build a foundation. You could build a real economic foundation for something here.
I mean, how much of that is going to go into investments? It should. Clearly.
Yeah.
Like, clearly.
Yeah. I mean, really, like, it's back to your lotto analogy. You know, if you win the lotto, you're supposed to invest most of it and live off the investment returns, not spend down your lottery winnings.
Yeah.
So there could be an argument that that's the most sustainable way for them to respond. They're not going to raise this kind of money every year.
No.
You know, invest it well. Make the money back, spend the money you're making. Go to a couple of white college towns and buy up all the student housing and take all that rent money from white kids and fund the revolution with that shit.
Yes.
You know?
The slum lords of the revolution, yo.
Hell fucking yeah. I'd be behind that shit too, man. What if Black Lives Matter owned all of the like student housing you could get at Duke? You know, yeah. You want to send your kid to Duke? We're catching your rent money. And you don't have any control over what's happening with that shit. We're going to spend that on black people, motherfucker, because that's capitalism.
Yeah. That would be kind of dope. Like, that would be something you could drop, like, in almost any community in a way, right?
You could.
Like, if your community needs, like, if your activist community needs resources,
mm-hmm.
and we've defined activists a certain way, then we just have a model where we just send somebody in with a big checkbook, and they spend a year coming up and buying up a bunch of shit that turns around profits.
Yep.
And y'all get that.
Yep.
That's dope.
That would fucking do it. And you can take that money and you could subsidize other people's rent. So these fucking rich ass white college kids are paying your rent in the hood. What about that?
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now that's the kind of reverse racism I can get behind. Give me that shit. Please.
Your rent for the next 6 months has been paid for by Trevor at Duke.
Yes. Please give me in 30 years a whole generation of rich ass white people complaining about black slumlords. gift me that, please.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. They got their own version of Farrakhan out there. The way they talk about the Jews in militant Harlem, you know, and be like, yeah, okay. You think Black Lives Matter? They don't care about you. They're parasites in our community.
Oh, man.
Oh, give me that shit. None of that money is coming back into our community.
How many times does the white dollar turn over before it goes into black hands? One, two times?
Yes. Yes. See if you get some fair housing legislation out of that. I bet you do.
Right.
I bet you do. Right.
What's the fastest way to get gun laws? Get every black person a gun.
Yep. Yep.
We should have gun store day.
Yep. That'll do it in a heartbeat.
Like how many just like even a just a small, really good school can you build with that? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And that wouldn't be popular, but something like that would. You're talking about changing some shit.
Mm-hmm.
That would really turn some shit over.
I'll just put it like this. If we look up, let's say 3 years from now, if shit ain't changed,
mm-hmm,
as a direct result of that investment, we need to do some real reassessment.
Yeah, I agree.
What is this movement really about? I'm fine that they ain't got it together in 6 months.
Right.
But, right, you know, what about the term of a president?
Yes, you know, I agree.
What were you able to do with $90 million in 4 years?
Somebody had better feel it. I don't want to see your organization broader and more official. Like, we don't need another NAACP, you know?
Right, right. Top heavy administrative ass fees, all that bullshit.
Yeah.
They already spent $8 million on that.
Yeah.
So, anyhow.
Anyhow.
Well, I think that's everything, man. Anything else?
No, I don't think I have anything else.
Well, covered a lot of ground in that amount of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good work. It's good when you can keep me on task.
I guess I'll just thank everybody for tuning in. We never know when we're going to do these shows, but you can probably almost predict it, because once there are about 8 or 10 really crazy race-related headlines, there's a good chance that we're about to hit record.
Yeah, if you can predict where our blood pressure might be based on the news, you can probably predict when another show is coming out.
Right. Okay, everybody, thank you for tuning in, and be safe.
Yeah, streets won't let me chill, yet me still, I'm searching for the cool in it all, as if my lining is silver and my flow cold enough, then my tongue stick to it like the winter with frost. Then I woke up, doped up on life, see, hustle is the motive like a motor that's on, right? Developed